Welcome to the Witty Committee. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Claire. And this week we're continuing reading the A-List series by Zoe Dean, highlighting Some Like It Hot, which is the name of a old movie that Courtney has not seen, and nor have I.
Take a shot every time Courtney hasn't seen a movie.
Well, you'll take a lot of shots this entire book because we're going to highlight a bunch of movies that I bet Courtney hasn't seen. So, hey, that'd be fun for this episode. We haven't done that before. If you want to make a drinking game, maybe grab something to drink if you're of age and join along. I am not drinking. I don't believe Courtney is either.
I'm not. I have to go dog sit for my parents after this.
The funniest thing is the entire first season, all of the click books, I was
blackout
drinking very heavily for all of those. And you can listen to some of the episodes. By the end, my S's are audibly slurring, which is bad because we record these on like weeknights. But
now we do. But when we were recording the click, it was definitely weekend primarily.
I feel like Sunday evenings. But anyway, now it's weeknights because Courtney and I have figured out a different schedule. Speaking of schedule, Courtney, what have you been doing in your free time outside of the podcast?
So I know I've been talking about books a lot recently, but I have pivoted my content consumption in that I still haven't finished Sadie by Courtney Summers. And so in the meantime, what I've been doing is watching Murder, She Wrote.
Oh my God, really?
All of the seasons are available on Peacock for free, and they are so campy, so good. I was inspired to watch it because I saw one of those like YouTube commentary videos about one individual episode of it. Hmm. And it had like Bryan Cranston, and it seemed really interesting. And so I started watching it, and it's such a comforting show. But apparently if Cabot Cove, the town where the main character is from, were a real place, then it would have like by far the highest murder rate of any country in the world.
Chicago, get out of the way.
Not even.
Not even close. That's really funny. If you like that, I have a recommendation for you. When I was living in London with my dad, my senior year of high school, my second semester, we found and fell in love with the show called Rosemary and Thyme. And Rosemary and Thyme are two, I'd say, on the higher end of middle-aged English gardeners who solve murder mysteries.
Ooh. First of all, I love the puns. Second of all, I did not know that you lived in London with your dad your second semester of senior year of high school.
Not the whole time. Just, like, I think we were there for, like, almost a month. But it was very fun. But we watched a lot of really campy. Rosemary and Thyme was the best because it's, like, it's the same thing as Murder, She Wrote, basically, but with British gardeners and puns. So beautiful. I think you'd like it a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what about you, Claire?
So I actually just finished the best book I think I've read in like 2 years. It's like, it left me, I'm still feeling it really, really hard. So I finished The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon.
Okay.
It is, when I tell you, it is the best book I've literally read in probably 2 years, maybe longer. I think the only thing that rivals it is Pachinko, which I read in 2018. So yeah, 2 years, 3 years, maybe even. Wow. But it is fantastic. It is Game of Thrones. If the main characters of Game of Thrones were women of color and like in accepted and cherished and well-written LGBTQ+ relationships, like, and it's you take a fantastic fantasy story, which if you listen to this podcast, you know I love fantasy. It's probably my favorite genre of books, but this is the best fantasy book I've ever read. Samantha Shannon took everything you could say was bad about fantasy as a genre and was like, I got this. And she wrote I think it's the best lesbian love story I've ever read. It's fantastic. It's also 850 pages. So
classic.
So I would recommend it, but like I recommend it to anyone, but I'm just letting you know that ahead of time. It's one of those books that I literally stayed up until like 3 a.m. some nights because I could not put it down. And to be completely honest, it made switching to reading Some Like It Hot kind of hard. Because this book isn't poorly written. Some Like It Hot is not poorly written. I think it's actually very good. But if you have to go from the best book you've read in like 3 years, to reading another book in the same series you've been reading, it's tough. But I did finish Some Like It Hot, and I have many thoughts about it.
I would hope you had finished it. I feel like if you didn't finish it, you should have DM'd me.
Well, I mean, I may have just finished it like an hour and a half ago, but, you know, we have to get through the things we have to get through. And we do, you know, I do it for the podcast. I do it for the listeners. And like, it's not enjoyable. It is fun to read. David was laughing at me because I was making like audible giggles and like sounds at some parts of it. I highlighted them all because I think they're hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, this book had pretty much everything. It had infidelity. It had documentaries. It had prom. It had murder. Like, that's, what more can you ask for?
It was just, everything was so, like, weird and juicy. And I also think something that was, this was the book that had the most bragging, like, wealth descriptions of any book we've read so far. Not just like we've had the most, I feel like it had the most outfit descriptions, it had the most house, like most in-depth house descriptions, car descriptions, food descriptions were a big thing in this book, which we hadn't really seen before to the level of this one. And it just, it felt kind of like an exercise in absurdity.
It also had, I think, the most touching upon of like extremely sensitive topics.
Yes.
And I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on this, because I know that for a lot of the other series that we've been talking about, like The Click and Gossip Girl, a lot of these things are sort of glossed over and made jokes of. And this mm-hmm. book also had things like disability and significant mental health diagnoses and like weight loss surgery and stuff like that. That's not like, we had Blair Waldorf's bulimia in Gossip Girl, but it wasn't really to the degree that this book had.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, like, I mean, I think we can start and like get there when we get there. But I 100% agree where I think something that we have said in the past two series that we've read is that there seems to be a lack of almost like follow through with the plot lines that should be bigger issues. So things like, you know, like Kristen's dad, we were always like, where's Kristen's dad? Like these family drama issues, or like the same thing with the Gossip Girl series, the books themselves lacked a lot of the depth that we're getting from this book, which is like, I'm really happy about that. And it's also made me change my mind about a number of characters.
Okay. I'm excited to hear that.
So starting with, and I have to start with Anna and Ben, shocker of all shockers, have gotten back together. So last time we heard from them, it was the end of last episode. It was they were both in Vegas. It was Anna's like spring senior trip, and Ben had flown in to see her. And Anna was learning that he had been seeing a girl at Princeton named Blythe. And that's all we knew. So we've skipped a good amount of time to get to where we are in this book, it felt like, because now it's May and Princeton has let out their student, which I feel like is wrong. I don't know when Princeton lets their students out for the end of the year, but early to mid-May seems incorrect.
Well, Anna also says in her like self-narration that she hasn't seen Ben in 3 months. And I mean, like, I know how to count to three. And so 3 months from early to mid-May is not when they went on this trip. And so I was like, there's a little bit of inconsistency there, but I'll allow it for the sake of like this book. And apparently also Sam has taken a trip to Paris to go see Eduardo, who is studying at the Sorbonne. And so while Anna is dealing with her relationship with Ben, and he's coming back home today as the start of the events of this book, Sam is sort of spiraling, being super jealous and like making up fantasies in her head about Eduardo cheating on her with like hot European babes. And she's starting to plant these seeds of suspicion in Anna about Ben.
And so the interesting thing about this book, and kind of like the climax that we'll get to later, is that everyone's trying to decide how they feel about prom. And Anna's like, you know what? I think it'd be fun to go. And Sam and Cammie are like, absolutely not. We went to prom last year because it was for charity. There's absolutely no way we're going to prom. And Cammie's like, why don't we go to Rio instead? And Anna's like, I don't know. I kind of want to go to prom. But anyway, so that's like the big question right now. But you're right. So despite... And this is something that was really interesting to me, is that Sam is exhibiting a little bit of like rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is something that I talk about with my therapist, talked about it with my therapist today, where she's planting these stories in her head of Eduardo cheating on her, flirting with other women, all these things that are like not true. And Eduardo has told her they're not true to her face, been like, I love you for you. But she's doing this to herself in the event that he does eventually cheat on her so that she can like mentally prepare herself for this rejection, which by doing this so vocally, because Sam has a really hard time with keeping her insecurities to herself and figuring them out for herself, which we see in her like constant descriptions of her body dysmorphia to other people, which got a little frustrating in this book, I would have to say, because every interaction she had with Anna was a comment on Anna's body and the contrast to hers. And I was like, yes, we've been there. We understand.
Yeah, and she did it with Cammy and with another character too, where it was like, it's constantly comparing herself to these other people, whether it's like, I'm hotter than you or you're hotter than me, and like trying to figure out where she lands in that spectrum. And that's so frustrating.
It was, yeah. And it just, I'll get, I think I'm going to like really narrow in on that later, because I just think that there's one exact instance that really was kind of, was problematic for me. And I love Sam. Like, I think Sam is probably one of my favorite characters, but you know, she has her flaws for sure. So Sam and Anna and then Cammy are trying to, they're all together before Ben arrives, and they're trying to design a fragrance for Jackson Sharp was like invited to do a signature fragrance in honor of like to support deaf children. I can't remember. What was it?
I think it's like Poor Kids in the Arts or something like that.
Yeah.
The charity is not important. It does not come up at all, except for in a vaccine. So.
But I just think it's so funny. But anyway, so that's what they're doing. And then Cammy has to leave because she's going to go hook up with Adam, because they're still together, which is great. But they kind of all disperse. But because Sam has been talking so much about Eduardo, like, and other women and like her fears, and then Anna, you know, obviously shoots that down. She's like, no, Eduardo thinks you're hot. He told you he thinks you're hot. Like, and she was like, well, but all these women were saying hi to him. And she was like, they're his classmates and people say hi to people. But Anna is driving to go see Ben. He's just arrived. And these like thoughts start to pop up in her head where she's like, well, what about this Blythe girl? Like, I don't know anything about her. And like, this was, I guess it had to be pre-Facebook days, because like she literally couldn't stalk this girl on the internet.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that misery loves company. And we all are guilty, I think, of trying to like investigate information about people when we're feeling really insecure. And it's unfortunate that Anna wasn't able to use Facebook, but Facebook also was started as basically a way to like power rank hot women at Harvard. So I guess she's not missing out too much. And so she shows up at Ben's house, which has been remodeled since the last time we were all there.
Yes.
And a girl who is like 5'10" and bodacious curves and like is wearing
long brown hair.
And she's wearing a bathrobe and is like very clearly just gotten out of the shower. And she opens the door and she says hello. And Anna says, hi, I'm here for Ben. And this girl says, oh, he just got out of the shower.
Yeah, which is not working well for Anna there. No. And this is what really gets me, because I feel like the placement here is very dubious. Because I was reading this and I was like, it's got to be Ben's sister. He's got to have a secret sister that we didn't know about. It's not. And the reasoning for the situation are it's convoluted. So this girl's name is Maddie. And Maddie is staying with the Burn Bombs because she is going to Pacific Palisades High for her junior year of high school. And she is staying with her aunt and uncle in the Palisades, I guess. But they're not there. So instead, she's staying in the Burn Bombs' empty home with their 19-year-old son.
Makes very little sense, because like the Burn Bombs are also not there. So if the point is to cover for the fact that she has no adult supervision, she still has no adult supervision. And like Ben being there is not supervision.
No. And also the only reason that she's staying with the Burn Bombs is because Dr. Burn Bomb did her mom's tummy tuck or something, like her aunt's tummy tuck.
Yeah. And speaking of tummy tuck, Maddie decides to assuage Anna's fears of the fact that she thinks that this girl is Blythe. And is like, oh no, I actually used to be And I'm just going to like be super blunt about it. She's like, I used to be super duper fat. I used to be 300 pounds. Here, do you want to see a picture? And she goes into this like graphic detail about how like bullied she used to be and how she's so happy that she got the surgery, but all she can have is like two licks of an ice cream cone because her stomach is so small now. And it's just extremely detailed.
Well, so I don't think we covered yet, but Dr. Birnbaum, to help her feel better about herself, stapled her stomach. And this girl is like max 17 if she's a junior in high school. A real certified doctor stapled her stomach as a 17-year-old.
Which this is also the book series where we have heard that all of these girls like Cammy and Sam have gotten plastic surgery as early as like 14 or 15. So it's not outside the realm of possibility, but that doesn't make it not upsetting. And this girl is very clearly like still very insecure and very awkward. And we also are introduced to another character who is not staying with Ben, but is friends with Ben from Princeton. His name is Jack Walker. And he introduces himself. He's like, Jack Walker, like Jack Daniels and Johnny Walker, so you never forget. And they all decide to like go out to, like Ben takes Anna out on the boat, and then they end up going to that clam restaurant in the marina where Anna had originally been abandoned. And
not then, triggering at all.
Yeah, very upsetting. Anna's got to stop going there. And it turns out that this guy, Jack, has invited himself to be Maddie's escort to her junior prom. And Ben is a little suspicious about that.
Yeah, I mean, so Maddie confesses to Anna that she doesn't really have any experience flirting with boys or talking to boys because she just was so insecure before. And Anna kind of sees that, like, maybe this guy Jack is an option and, like, kind of puts them, it's like encouraging Maddie to flirt when she felt like she needed it. And so that's what, like, Maddie and Jack meet up with Ben and Anna because they've been hanging out. And then, like, they're kind of doing a bit of a group date situation. And then I guess Jack and Maddie hang out another time. And, like, Jack helps take artful nude-ish photos of her. Which is
super sneaky.
But yes, she had asked Jack, or Jack had like, I don't know, finagled his way into being Maddie's junior prom date, which Ben is not happy about because apparently Jack is even more of a womanizer than Ben was his first semester of college, which is funny because the way that Anna describes Jack is very weird. He feels like he looks like Adam Sandler to me, but like the young Adam Sandler from like early 2000s, which was like goofy and like not horrible looking, but his outfits are just like, he wears bowling shirts everywhere. Is that not so Adam Sandler?
I see him as like a ska ginger guy, and he's like apparently very lanky, and so I choose to put that in my mental brain bank for how he is. But what Ben doesn't know about Jack is that Jack has a younger sister. She's 13. Her name is Margie. And she is somehow developmentally disabled. Yeah. And this book, as being early 2000s, uses the R word, but it does so in a way where Jack, as being the only representative of someone who like has a disabled family member, is like against the use of that word because he finds it like pejorative and insulting. And I appreciated that, I think.
Yeah, especially I feel like it was very aware for the time because like people threw that word out there
like left constantly. Right and center. And so part of Jack's like motivation for making it big in Hollywood or whatever, and how he wants to work on reality TV, is that the reality TV shows that he grew up watching with his younger sister, and that's like the bonding that they had, and he's sort of like looking out for her. And he also sort of sees Maddie as a little sister as well, and so that is a relationship dynamic that Ben is not picking up on, because it seems that Ben, despite claiming that Jack is his good friend, actually doesn't know a lot about his life.
Yeah, which I totally understand, because teenage boys aren't notorious for divulging their like feelings and secrets to each other, but it's nice that I think something that was really refreshing from this book is we got a lot of new perspectives that I wasn't expecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think more perspectives than we've gotten from other books so far, because we spent a lot of time with Ben and some time with Jack, and we spent some time with, like, we got to kind of
look around. We got Parker, we got Dee.
Yeah.
And thankfully it wasn't overwhelming, where like, you know how during Gossip Girl there were so many instances where it was like, wait, who are we in and why does it sound so discordant and like how am I supposed to keep track of what storyline we're following? This actually felt like it made sense, and it was able to lull me into a sense of believing whoever's perspective I was in, to the point where like there was one of those like, oh, and it was just this person's fantasy, and I totally bought it. And so that, I think, was like some pretty good. That was some pretty good writing.
We're going to get down there because I had the same thing and I was pissed.
Me too.
Oh, I was so mad. But
the last thing I want to say about Jack is that he is from New Jersey, and everyone in this book makes no aspersions about New Jersey.
Everyone hates New Jersey.
Everyone's like, Jack's poor trash.
He sounds like he's from Jersey City. He's trash. Yeah. Like, it's so mean. Jersey City is perfectly nice. I've said that before. I'll say it again.
Well, Anya, anyway, at least, is like, he's not from like this town or this town in New Jersey. And I'm like, okay, so you know some towns in New Jersey.
Fair. I mean, you would if you, like, it's North Jersey. That's like the people who say, oh yeah, I'm from the city. And you're like, oh, where? And they say Hoboken.
Gross. I'm throwing up in my mouth.
Oh my God. But anyway, so that's what we've got on Jack. Kind of on the flip side of that, Sam is still trying to, so Sam and Anna came here at this cafe to kind of discuss everything that's been going on. And whilst there, Sam stumbles upon a film competition for young directors. It is blind judged, and she has decided that it's the perfect thing to do as the end of her senior year of high school is to do this film. And she gets an idea when she and Anna leave the cafe and are bombarded by Fee and Jasmine and Ophelia, who are the heads of the prom committee, and they desperately, desperately want Sam to say that she'll come. Because if Sam doesn't come, then the rest of the cool people don't come, and then if the cool people don't come, then the not cool people don't want to come, and then nobody comes to prom.
Yeah.
And it's their 50th anniversary prom.
Which I've never heard of that being a thing, but okay. And so they're really pitching it, and Sam decides that this is going to be the subject of her documentary to enter into this film contest, where it's going to be like how the other half lives with regards to like the A-list and the B-list at school. And this is like, these are terms that Sam uses explicitly out loud, which I found to be very funny. Not unlike the like named cliques that we've talked about in previous seasons, yes, where it's like, oh, you actually use that as a term? That's so lame. And so Sam's like, oh yeah, I'm going to film all these girls and like how badly they care about prom and how pathetic it is that they care. And Anna is not about it. She's like, that is super duper mean. And I care about prom, so that kind of sucks. But Sam is also couching it as a way to invite Eduardo to come with her. And because she
and
doesn't
not
want
be
to
embarrassed by it.
Yeah. She doesn't want to admit that she wants Eduardo to come with her to prom. And I can sort of see where Sam is coming from, because it's like prom, she, like, her and her best friend Cammy have already decided that prom is lame, but to then invite your older, also rich European magnate who's like going to school at the Sorbonne to come to your high school prom, I can see how that could be viewed as a little
lame. The main thing though is that Sam does, she agrees to help, and the prom is supposed to take place at the Bel Air Grand Hotel, which to me just felt like the Chateau Marmont, but they couldn't say it. Or I don't know. Is the Bel Air Grand somewhere real? You can look that up. Okay. Well, it's this old Hollywood hotel that has kind of fallen into a little bit of disrepair. I don't know if it's fallen into disrepair, but I'll say it's fallen out of favor. And it's very like Clark Gable, you know, like very old Hollywood. And so Sam decides that like there's actually some elegance there. It had some really nice descriptions. And so there's definitely some promise for the event. So she basically takes over and is in control of the helm of the show, basically. One thing I highlighted from, so Sam goes with Jazz and Fee to like look through the venue, and she makes a comment that Fee drives an Audi, which is a B-list car. And I highlighted that because I said, Cammy drives a BMW and Anna drives a Lexus. And a Lexus is just a nicer Toyota. So why is an Audi a B-list car? Anyway, just thought that was fun. I want to know the hierarchy there.
Yeah, I personally don't know enough about cars. Like, obviously, I know a Porsche is a fancy car and I know a Ferrari is a fancy car. And, like, I think that some people, you know how like some families only ever have like golden retrievers and some families only ever drive Volvos?
Yes, I think exactly. That
there's probably like a similar sentiment there. I don't know enough about cars to know like Audi versus Lexus. I do see those That's Not a Buick commercials, and I think that those are kind of funny, but I don't know anything more than that about cars. I'm sure if there were Teslas in this time, then they would talk about
I'll be
Teslas.
Driving. I think if we had taken this and made it now, either everyone would have either had white Range Rovers or Teslas. That would have been it, because that's all there
well, not
are
not Anna,
LA.
Because Anna would think that that's like...
Anna would drive a like Mercedes C-Class or something.
Exactly. But yeah. I do think that it's... The hotel seems cool. As I Googled it, it doesn't look like it's a real hotel. The mm-hmm. hotel seems cool, and Sam is like, this is like post-hip to the point where it could make like a resurgence. And then she makes a good point about how their menu, while good, doesn't have any vegetarian items. And do you remember how like early 2000s vegetarian was the
vegan?
Vegan? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And I feel like back then everyone's like, ew, tofu. Ugh, you're going to eat bean curd? Gross. And now tofu, like I eat tofu pretty regularly. Tofu is yummy. Tofu is good. Like, I'm glad we've moved past that basically. But now obviously like we've got, you know, the vegan brigade, whatever. It's good that, so that's kind of the noticing of the menu is what makes Sam realize that she has to like get a planner in there. And like, if she's going to really film this. And I think it's also that you see that Fee and Jazz start to kind of endear themselves to Sam in a way that's past the like kind of suck-up-y way that they had tried to get to her before. Like they're genuinely excited about it. And we get to hear a little bit about like their parents and like apparently I guess Fee's mom lived on a commune growing up. And so she doesn't really understand why her daughter is so obsessed with the material things, but she supports it because she knows she loves her. And like, you know, we get to hear a little bit about what makes these people people rather than just like supplicants.
Yeah.
So,
and that actually endears them to Sam a little bit more, to the point where like Sam actually decides to pivot her
yes.
topic of her documentary from being about like teasing the prom weenies, that's Sam's term, not mine, to being more about like what it's like to throw a prom and like be really invested in that. And it's also pertinent because we hear a lot in this book about Sam's non-relationship with her mom,
mm-hmm.
who
I would
guess,
say moms in general. Moms
yeah,
in general?
Moms in general, but like this was the impetus for Sam changing her thing, was because she was like, it's so great that Fee's mom, despite not agreeing with the concept of like dressing up and putting a lot of money into prom, because like Fee apparently had a scrapbook of dresses that she had wanted, the pre-Pinterest board, of like things that she wanted to wear for prom dresses, then also one for wedding dresses. And her mom was like, I don't get it, but if it makes you happy, I'll support you. And Sam was like, damn, wouldn't that
That's
be nice?
Nice?
I haven't seen my mom in over a decade.
Yeah. But, you know, it's definitely like that kind of like well-roundedness of the characters that really draws Sam to them and like, and I guess gives her buy-in to the situation. So there's a couple of things that happen after this that create definite like hooks in the plot line. So we haven't talked much about Cammy and Adam yet, our faves. And if you remember the end of last episode, Adam had offered to help Cammy find out more information about the death of her mom. And Courtney had mentioned Natalie Woods? Yeah.
Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood. And I read up on Natalie Wood and it's the same story.
It's literally what happened. It's insane. And
but Cammy doesn't know that yet.
Yes, she doesn't know. So Adam and Cammy are sitting on the beach, like doing some sort of senior skip day thing. And Adam is like, hey, by the way, I know we haven't talked about it since we got back from Vegas, but I did have my parents look into the mysterious death of your mom. And Cammy is pissed because it's her mom's birthday, which Adam doesn't know because she doesn't talk about that sort of thing. And she's just feeling really violated. Like this is an internal struggle. And for someone else to be like bringing it up and just like pushing at it feels like really intense and very real to her. And I totally get that in the sense that like the death of your mom when you are a young child is intensely personal and very traumatic. But Cammy just lashes out at Adam in a way that I want to support you, but this is the one person who is in your corner. Basically,
yeah.
Nobody else supports Cammy. And Adam is trying his best. And part of what she does is like her internal monologue is like, I'm mad at you for like prying into this, but also I want you to push back at me for being mad at you. And now I'm mad at you for not getting mad at me back. And I'm like, that's not an okay reaction.
Yeah. But I mean, I'd be lying if I had if I don't say that I'd been there.
Sure. Like, but that part of it is like recognizing that that's a toxic behavior.
Oh yeah, for sure. But Cammy doesn't, the worst thing is that she doesn't know how to handle coming down from her toxic behaviors, because she flees the fight scene basically and goes to have dinner with her dad at the Beller Grand Hotel, because only one hotel per story apparently.
Well, we do also see Beverly Hills Hotel.
But we know that that doesn't count. And so Cammy goes to have dinner with her dad. He has to leave early, and she's like, I'm not gonna see you tonight. And he's like, why do you have to say that? And she's like, because I know how this works and you don't actually care about me. And he's like, why do you have to do that, Cammy? And she's like, don't you know it's mom's birthday? And then he gets mad and stalks away, and she's even more pissed than she was before. So she sits at the bar, and a nice actor man buys her a drink and asks her up to his hotel room to smoke. They keep saying Thai sticks, and I know that a Thai stick is just weed, but the fact that they say that, it just seems so weird to me. Maybe it's a time thing.
They also use the word 420 in place of weed. Like they say when she gets drunk and 420 or whatever. And I'm like, that's not how people talk. But they actually go up to the second floor, like men's bathroom or whatever, because there are no security cameras. And they smoke this pot. And they make out a little bit, which Cammy determines is not cheating.
Not cheating.
They only make out. They don't have sex.
Kissing's not cheating, apparently.
I feel like in this evolved 2021 day and age, what you and your significant other define as cheating is between you two. But like, this is very clearly Cammy electing to draw very curvy, wobbly lines. And if she had asked Adam, Adam would disagree. But so she only makes out with him, throws away the roach, another term that I don't use in my day-to-day life. And the next morning she wakes up, and lo and behold, the hotel burned down.
The entire hotel burned down because they found a cigarette in the second floor bathroom, men's bathroom, which is where Cammy was. So Cammy burned the hotel down that prom was supposed to be in. And nobody knows except for Cammy, and then she doesn't get any repercussions for it.
Just like with her credit card being turned off and her car being towed, there are zero repercussions for Cammy, and I'd like to see where this goes. But so Sam shows up on her front lawn and is like holding the newspaper with the front page story, and she's like, did you see this? And Cammy's like, I'm going to jail.
And instead Sam's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And then she obviously figures it out because she's Sam Sharp. And this is where we're gonna get to the first of the movies that I don't think that Courtney has ever seen.
Correct.
So Sam's dad is filming a remake of Ben-Hur, which I have seen a number of times. First one I saw was the Charlton Heston version, which is the one they reference a lot. And I watched it in sixth grade social studies class. Ben-Hur is it's a Roman gladiator movie. And it's like the first R-rated movie I think I ever, it was like one of the first R-rated movies ever or something like that. Gonna have to look that up. But basically, big deal. I think they tried to make remakes before, and basically the whole thing is that this is supposed to be the best remake ever because Jackson Sharp has put a ton of money into it. He's directing it. He's starring in it. We all know that he's action Jackson Sharp, which is hard to say. And so they've built a full-scale model of the Coliseum in Santa Monica, I guess, somewhere. Or like north of the city somewhere. And that is where they are now going to host prom.
And it makes very little sense, because the more they talk about the things that they're adding on to this venue to make this prom fantastic, but then the contrasting of that with like, oh, this movie is going over budget. This movie is going over budget a lot. And then it's like the prom has horse-drawn chariots for the prom goers and monogrammed personalized bathrobes and various because Roman bathhouses that they just built for prom.
Yeah, they built a Roman bathhouse, which, I mean, I think the idea is way cooler, because originally the prom was supposed to be Renaissance. Sorry, that was weird. My mouth stopped working. Supposed to be Renaissance themed. with like Ren Faire actors, which I think,
like both of those ideas because I do really like Renaissance.
I like the Ren Faire, but
I don't understand the second where this one is coming from.
I mean, all of these rich people. The second one ends up being like Roman themed, like which I think is really cool. I mean, I haven't ever been to like a Roman themed party, but we can touch into prom again later, because the big thing that happens is, if you guys want to circle back with us to the fact that Maddie, Ben's housemate, family friend, who is like a younger sister to him, her prom is on Saturday, her junior prom. She is taking Jack. And Friday night is the Beverly Hills High prom. And Eduardo is flying in. He can't stay after the prom because he has to go to Northern Mexico for a family event. Ben is going with Anna on Friday night. Friday night's supposed to be the night. Jackson Sharp calls in. He says, "I'm sorry. This movie's running over. We're not going to be able to let you do it on Friday night, but I've cleared you for Saturday." So Sam's like, "Okay, fine." Switching everything over to Saturday. She tries to call Eduardo and get him out of his family thing. He cannot do it. That is unfortunate. Parker says, I'll go with you instead. Lo and behold, this happens right around the same time that Ben decides that there's no way that he can let Maddie take Jack to prom, because Jack is a womanizer. He's a bad dude. Like, he's a guy's guy, but like, Ben doesn't trust him. So what does Ben do? Hops on top of that white horse, volunteers himself, because he's supposed to be going to prom with Anna on Friday. So he says he'll go with Maddie on Saturday. And this is where, and I have felt this before, and I want to hear your feelings about this. I thought that Maddie was going to be like a sneaky little minx.
Oh, ditto, for sure. This book had us all the way believing that this is some sort of like big conniving, trying to get in Ben's pants thing. Because throughout this entire book, this girl is in a robe constantly.
The whole time.
She's never wearing clothes. She is always
naked. Which I don't get.
To the point where she like takes Ben's robe from the bathroom and then goes and slow dances in the bathrobe with Jack in Ben's bedroom? Question mark? Very confused.
She wears, Ben makes a note of saying that she's frequently wearing Ben's clothes. Which, like, it's so weird to me. And it doesn't get, that doesn't go away. That is still very strange to me. But Anna is very magnanimous about it. And she's, you know, being very cool, calm, and collected. Because that's obviously what the East Coast WASP Big Book of How We Do Things tells you what to do. And so she says, "That's totally fine. You'll go with Maddie for the beginning of her prom, and then you'll come to ours later. It's not a big deal." And she takes it a step further by helping. So Maddie can't afford a prom dress, so her mom sent her one. And it's like, you know, the big pink poofy.
The Giovanni thing. When you're in high school and everyone in the prom Facebook group is like posting their spangly, bright colored prom dress. My mom, I tried on a couple of those when I was going to prom my sophomore year. And my mom was like, "Absolutely not. You look not good in that." And like, and she was right. Like, they were not flattering on me. There are some girls who can really rock that look. And that was not 5 foot tall, like little Courtney. And so that's definitely the vibe that I got from that. But Anna does volunteer, sort of like side volunteers Sam into giving this girl a total movie montage makeover. You know who else is there though, and who else needs a date to this prom?
Dee's back.
Dee's been at a rehab facility in Ojai, yep. Which is apparently like the nicest rehab facility. It costs thousands of dollars to go, to the point where like Dee makes a comment that the juices at the juice bar are free. And I'm like, could you imagine if they weren't? You're at an inpatient mental health facility, and like then you have to whip out your wallet in order to pay for a juice. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean,
but there are like counts and countesses at this place, and Anna, Cammy, and Sam go to visit Dee. I don't know why Anna is there.
Well, that's the thing, is we see now that Anna and Cammy and Sam spend a lot of time together in this book, and Anna and Cammy don't rip each other's faces off, which is fine.
That's nice.
But basically, They're able to get Dee out on like a night pass so she can come to prom, which is very fun. And Dee is a changed woman. And let me just say that medication works wonders. And it did for Dee. She was on a whole cocktail of things, and they finally found the medication that worked right for her. I did the same thing, and she's a whole new person. She can like look back and see where she's made mistakes and like have kind of this awareness of the world around her and like mad respect for Dee now. I know that I've maybe said some shit in the past, but you know, very, very much Team Dee.
I don't want to like put you on the spot about this there. So like feel free in editing if you want to end up editing this out. I totally respect that. But like she's diagnosed with bipolar disorder and you've talked a lot on our podcast about your diagnosis and your experience with bipolar disorder. Do you feel that that's consistent with Dee? I mean, obviously understanding that everyone's experience is different.
So I think that bipolar is a really easy thing to write into like a script of someone, right? Had I thought about it myself, I might have said with the like hallucinations thing that Dee is schizophrenic, but I do think that the kind of like waves of like feeling that she experiences where she might feel like this invincibility and this like drive to proselytize and you know for me just to kind of if we're gonna you know be out there about it, I have bipolar too, so I don't really have manias the same way that someone who has like the stereotypical idea of bipolar, which is bipolar one, would have. But Dee does have manic phases and she has things that show up as being like manias. So she has, I also think that like another thing of like mental illness in general is like hyperfixation and like obsession, which we see with Dee's like spirituality kind of thing. And like she just, we can see that, you know, she's got a lot of those symptoms that like are exhibited. And I also think the main thing why I think bipolar is an okay, like an accurate diagnosis for her is that women with bipolar disorder aren't usually diagnosed until their late teens to early 20s because a lot of the like hypomanic, so hypomanics like tiny mania behaviors can be seen as like just emotional, like, oh, she's just moody, which is the worst thing ever. Or the worst thing is that like if you have what happened to me is that because I have bipolar 2, that's where I get hypomanias, which are like tiny spurts of productivity and focus. And then I get really deep depressive phases. And if something like that was happening to Dee, where there would just be like 2 or 3 months of time where she was like really killing it on her grades or like, you know, being a really fun time around her friends and like kind of being like the upper, and then she had some like really down times, it's hard to see those together as a conjunction to be bipolar. And a lot of times people, this is what happened to me, were diagnosed with depression. And if you give somebody who has bipolar disorder, which is a psychotic disorder, antidepressants, it makes psychosis worse. So I think it's totally valid and fair. Do I think that I mean, it makes sense that if she was having these very vivid manias that they'd put her on lithium. I am not and have never been on lithium because I don't struggle with mania. I really struggle with the depression side of it. But that's another thing that I find so interesting about these books is like the last book, like the drug references that they use in terms of like medicating mental illnesses are accurate. Like they're real things. And so I think it's, and also the fact that like when I was put on the correct medication, which did take a good chunk of time to get to that diagnosis, the same way they describe it with Dee being at this like treatment center in Ojai, they talk about she was on lithium and she was trying something else and then she tried something else and now she's feeling really good, is when you're on the right cocktail of meds and you remember to take your meds, if you are listening to this podcast and you are on some kind of antidepressant, antipsychotic, whatever, I'm on antipsychotics, it's totally fine. If you're on them and you're feeling really great and you think you don't need them anymore, no, you feel great because you do need them. And this is my reminder to you from someone else who's dealt with this, that take your meds. anyway, pulling back from that. But that's the thing, is it's like once I found my right medications, I, you know, have been pretty much stable for the last like 7 years. So I think it's totally fair to say that Dee, once she got on the right cocktail of medications, which can also change over time, and the fact is that she's devoted to coming back after this prom night to continue her treatment, which is fantastic, that she recognizes that she needs it and she is enjoying like coming into herself again. I love it because you don't see that with people who are experiencing really intense mental illness in books or in pop culture, really. It's just sensationalized. And I talk a lot in general about how I dislike pop culture representations of bipolar disorder, and not even pop culture representations, but kind of the pop culture real life advocates for bipolar disorder, I think I find, I desire a lot more from them, but I do think that this description of Dee's struggle is pretty accurate, at least from my experience. But anyway.
Yeah, I think that that's a really interesting juxtaposition that you draw, especially since we have seen other examples of inpatient care when it comes to Susan and how she has like actively left those programs early, or like been told, oh no, you're fine, like you can leave a week out of a 2-week program early, that sort of thing. And like you can see the consequences of not seeing your treatment out all the way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for this book's faults, it potentially is opening up a larger discussion about the different paths that you can take through mental health things. I also think, and this is a much shallower take on it, it's interesting that the two women who we see going into mental health treatment facilities between Blair Waldorf and Dee both get their hair cut into super, super short pixie cuts.
Well, you know, a woman changes her hair when she's ready to change her life. Put on a Pinterest t-shirt somewhere, whatever. Basically, Dee gets broken out of, it's not rehab, it's a mental health treatment facility, to go to prom, which is super exciting, but she doesn't have a date. And so it's Cammie's job to find her a date. And who does Cammie find for Dee? This is like date juggling to the extreme. So yeah, Cammie...
date musical chairs.
Exactly. Cammie finds Jack, Ben's friend, to go with Dee. And what I think is the most fun part of the book, which I'm sure Courtney's going to agree with me, is that we're going to circle back to the pink dress that Maddie was supposed to wear to prom. Anna sees it, Cammie sees it, Dee sees it, and Sam sees it, and they're like, absolutely not, are you wearing this? Hard no.
Yeah, Cammie straight up goes like, does your mom hate you, Maddie? And I'm like, Cammie, that's exactly what you would say.
And it just, it's so true. It's also funny because I actually highlighted this because Maddie says, oh my God, you guys are so nice. And Dee says, this is my favorite part, which I thought was so accurate. Let me go ahead and see if I can find it. Dee says that one of us is too nice, referring to Anna. Two of us are rarely nice. And one of us, that would be me, has neuropsychological issues. Which I loved because it just felt so like accurate, and it's something that like I would say would be like, you know, someone.
It was interesting that she described Cammie as being sometimes
nice. Oh, she said rarely nice.
But like Sam and Cammie are not in the same category.
Oh, no, frequency. Definitely not. But basically what they do is they initiate a, I'm going to go through and read the list of movies, and we're going to, they initiate a teen movie style makeover for Maddie. I'm going to go through and list the movies that they name because I want to give everyone an opportunity to take a drink every time Courtney doesn't know a movie. So the first movie.
I mean, do I know them or have I seen them?
Them? That's seen the them. Okay, okay, seen them. Fair. First one is Clueless.
Have seen.
Okay, good. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Have seen.
It's Heath Ledger as a child. He's so good. She's All That.
Have not seen. That's Rachel Lee Cook, right?
I think so.
They're remaking that, I think, with what's-her-face, Addison Rae or Savannah what's-her-face? Some TikToker.
Oh, no. Oh, that's so awful. Drive Me Crazy.
Have not seen.
I don't think I've seen that one either, but Never Been Kissed?
Never been seen.
No Molly Ringwald? No. Okay, well, moving forward, I guess. No, Never Been Kissed is Drew Barrymore, and then Pretty in Pink is Molly Ringwald. Have you watched that one?
Also have not seen.
Okay, then Anna's reference, which have you read Pygmalion?
I have read Pygmalion.
Everyone's going through the
list. Tell yourself, I'm secretly
Anna. And then Anna goes, oh, like Pygmalion. And everyone's like, sure, Anna, like Pygmalion. But the topper is to the list is Not Another Teen Movie. Have you seen that?
No.
Okay, well, I hope all of you are adequately drunk at the moment because Courtney doesn't watch television. You'd think she doesn't watch. That's not she true. Does watch
I
television.
Do watch television.
As you know,
I don't watch movies.
From like the entire last season when I tried to do books every week and Courtney was like, can I say a TV show instead?
Sometimes they were podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, they do a full makeover on Maddie, including the eyebrows, which I guess they tint to be 2 shades lighter than her natural eyebrows.
Like bleach?
That's what they said. They said her hair, her eyebrows are now 2 shades lighter than her natural hair.
And this is like early 2000s, like 2006. So skinny eyebrow game.
That makes me sad. But they also give her like a keratin treatment, which also was...
Yeah, Japanese straightening treatment. So, have you seen those videos?
No.
Oh my God, they're insane. I'll link them in the show notes. The Japanese hair straightening videos are crazy.
Really? Oh my God. I never heard about that. So I didn't know it was a real thing. I thought they were just making it up to make it sound more intense.
No, but they do say that the girl who's doing it, her name, her like birth name was like Catherine or whatever. And then she changed her name to sound Japanese. I think she changed it to like Kitsune or something. Oh, and I'm like, that's the worst. Please don't. And apparently her booking like increased by 300% by the time she changed her name to sound Japanese. I'm like, that's cultural appropriation at its finest.
I'm making a face right now and it's not a good one. Oh, her name is Suki.
Yep, no, that's a bad thing.
I don't like that. But the other fun part is that all of the girls are playing dress up, and I don't want to go too deep into this because I think all of them, which I'm going to highlight very quickly later, will be my... All of the main girls, not including Maddie, are going to be my fashion faves. So we can talk about Maddie's dress.
Let's talk about Maddie.
So Maddie is put... It's funny because so Sam goes through and like... quickly analyzes all of the girls' styles, and she literally had just met Maddie, and she tells Maddie that she thinks that her style is like Anna Nicole Smith with taste, which is, I don't know if you can do that, really. Do you know who Anna Nicole Smith is?
I do know who Anna Nicole Smith is, and I was like, when did she die in relation to the publishing of this novel is my question.
Let's see. Because she's the one who died in the, like,
she died super young.
Yeah.
2006, this book was published. So when did she die?
February 2007. That's not good.
Oh, yikes.
Also, she, like, with taste, it's a weird way of describing her. But basically...
Well, I'm sure if you said the same thing about Paris Hilton, then, like, you would get the... I think that hindsight is 2020 in this one.
For sure. So basically, that's the descriptor. If you know what that means, then let us know. But what it ends up being is a two-piece lavender silk top and ball gown combination by Marc Jacobs. So like those that a couple years ago when all the girls were wearing crop top two-piece prom outfits.
I think that's a good look sometimes.
Yeah, me too. I just like...
And I like the idea of lavender. It seems like she has like this long dark hair, and it feels like that would be very pretty. Like, I think that lavender is such a flattering color. Like
beautiful pale skin. It's, you know, I bet it would work. So she gets into this dress, and shocker, but all of the work has gone to make her amazing. When she finally has to get into the dress, however, Anna offers to help. And instead, and this is what I was leading up to earlier, and this is the instance that really upset me, is that Sam has to be the one to help Maddie into her dress because Sam, I'm going to read the paragraph, simply had to compare Maddie's body with her own, which turned out to be a bad idea. No matter how shy Maddie was in her Walmart white cotton underwear, very shy indeed, the truth was right there for Sam to see. Maddie might tip the scales at a higher number, but her body still put Sam's to shame. Her waist was easily 10 inches smaller than her bust, and her hips were maybe an inch smaller than her bust. Hourglass all the way. It might not be the Hollywood look of the moment, and there were plenty of surgery scars. Ugh. But hot was hot, and Sam knew it. Which, like,
it's real, and I appreciate the fact that it's real. It is upsetting, though, that those two things are not mutually exclusive.
I think the thing that maybe rubs me the wrong way a little bit too much about the stuff that Sam does is that I think it hits a little too close to home for me.
Because, exactly. That's what makes it real.
Yeah, because I catch myself doing this, and I wish I wasn't this person. I wish I didn't have this issue. But, like, I compare myself to other people constantly. And it's mainly me comparing my body because, like, I've struggled with body image issues my entire life. And so the thing is that I can't say I wouldn't be doing exactly what Sam is doing. Even to the point where, like, so I was reading this book, and then today I was, like, thinking about a lot about why Sam does what she does. And I had sent a photo of something in like my work group chat, and I said, oh, ignore my sausage fingers. And I was like, you didn't need to say that. Why did you say that about yourself? And so like catching myself doing these same things, it's like I can be so upset over Sam doing it to herself, but then I don't have the luxury of being that compassionate to myself. Like, why? So
Yeah, I 100% agree with you on that. And I feel like I see the exact same thing with how we talk about Cammy too, where it's like the reason why these behaviors upset us so much is because we recognize them as some of the worst parts of ourselves. And that's just something that I think that is true of a lot of these books that we've been reading throughout these past three seasons, is that like the things that are super annoying about us as our present day selves and also as our teenage selves when we read them, like not communicating and like being secretive and being jealous and that sort of stuff, is like, of course I hate that. And I hate that about me. And that's what these books are doing, is that they're shining a mirror back at me of my worst qualities.
For sure. And I would like to say that I feel like Anna doesn't reflect me at all, but then the things we get annoyed at Anna about her, like, incredibly pretentious things, and then Courtney and I are both so annoyingly pretentious too.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I hate how Anna is a pick-me girl who's never seen a single movie, and then I too am a pick-me girl who's never seen a single movie.
Yeah, and me in high school, like, being like, I'm too cool to talk to everyone because I'm gonna sit in the corner and read books instead. Like, we are those people, and so that's why we get to rag on them, because it's just like we're talking about ourselves.
Exactly.
But you know what? I'm glad that Maddie had a glow-up moment, and all of the girls felt very confident in their outfits, which I will talk about later. So that was great. They all had the opportunity to feel beautiful. Question for you. Have I covered my prom story before? I feel like I've brought it up on the podcast before.
Tell it again.
I'd rather not, so that's why I wanted to know if you remembered anything about it.
I don't know. I have a hard time paying attention to things.
Okay. Well, so when I was...
I could talk about my prom stories if you'd rather.
Well, I'll share mine. It's rather quick. It's sad, though. So when I was a junior in high school, I had just switched high schools to my second high school. Uh-huh. And it was the winter of that year, probably like January or February. And I had gone to a party and had a large amount of alcohol for like the first time, probably, or like first or second time. And I don't remember saying this, but apparently I was saying that I wanted to leave the party to hang out with the cool kids. Don't know what that means. And I'll bleep this part out, but I don't know if you remember Drew James. He was an SAE.
No.
Okay, well, it was his house. I'll look him up.
Okay.
Hate him. Anyway, he apparently heard this and sent out a group, like, blast to all of the guys in the entire high school, freshman to senior, saying, don't ask Claire Hasbrook to prom. She's a bitch. And so I got blacklisted from prom. Nobody asked me to prom.
I definitely have never heard this story before.
Yeah, so nobody asked me to prom. I had to ask a friend, Jack, from my old high school, who said yes. But then I had to try to find people to go to prom dinner with, and all the guys organized the prom dinner, and so none of them let me come with them to prom. And, like, in hindsight, should I have not said that whilst drunk? Yes. Should they have maybe been nicer to a 16-year-old? Also, I think it was 17, but should they? Yeah. It was super mean.
Yeah, teens can be, like, weirdly vindictive and hold grudges for the longest time, and that is an absurdly long time to hold that grudge.
Yeah, so it was...
And also, who has the phone number of everyone freshman?
Oh, it was like a Facebook message. It was a Facebook message.
Still, I'm not friends with everyone like that.
Nobody told me about it for, like, a year. And then one girl who was, like, my friend, like, took pity on me and let me know why. And now in hindsight, I'm like, oh, she was not your friend.
Yeah.
She was not your friend.
There's really no right way to handle that.
Yeah.
That's
so
not great.
I was very...
Well, I'm sorry that you had that unfortunate prom circumstance.
Yeah, what?
Now I feel bad about enjoying all my
proms. I'm glad other people got to enjoy them. I actually, it was funny, my brother was like trying to decide whether or not he wanted to go to his senior prom, and I like yelled at him. I was like, if you don't go, then some girl's not going to get asked and she's not going to go. And
true.
So he ended up taking his friend Grace, and they looked really cute, so that made me happy.
Oh, I'm sure. We should post prom pics on the Insta.
No, because I was, okay, sure, I was in the midst of my very bad eating disorder, but we can do that.
Okay, then we don't have to do yours.
No, I mean,
I'm more than happy to just post pictures of me looking hot to try.
No, I mean, we can show, I feel like it's a good representation of, like, what high school is like, and it's accurate for the book, so we can post it.
Okie dokie.
I really liked my dress. So, anyway.
Love that for you.
Yeah.
Did you have a corsage?
I did have a corsage. Did you have a corsage?
I thought the corsages were super lame. Like, aww. I thought that they were chuggy before chuggy was chuggy. No. And so I got a corsage my sophomore year, but when I was dating my boyfriend and like for junior and senior prom, I was like, don't get me a corsage. And so he got me bouquets of flowers instead.
Oh, well, that's cute. At least he got you something. But I got a corsage.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was probably from Publix, but still. Not mad about it. I got corsages and stuff for all of the PDC things I went to. So yeah, like I went to one prom, but then I went to three PDCs, which I feel like I've talked about before, but that's my pre-debutante cotillion. Mm-hmm. Which was very fun. But anyway, I don't know. Do you want to tell one prom story?
I'm just trying to think of like different, I think my favorite prom story is either my freshman year or my junior year. My freshman year, I didn't go to school full time my freshman year. I also went to a performing arts high school. And so we had like a prom that everyone could go to at this performing arts high school. And so I went with this girl who had been the like best friend of the girl who is currently my best friend from high school, but like they had been best friends. And when my best friend from high school and I had like this big fight, I was like, I'm gonna steal your friend.
Oh my god,
we became really good friends. But I also had a really big crush on this girl, and it was like before I really understood that liked girls. And so I was like, it was a weird like love hate situation where I was like, I want to be you and I want to be with you both in a platonic and in like an I have a crush on you kind of way. She's great still. No hard feelings among any of those people. And I'm still like best friends with my high school best friends. But so we went to a conveyor belt sushi place in West Hartford, and then we went to prom. And it was like, if you look at the photos of me from that night, I'm wearing a $20 Forever 21 hot pink strapless bandage dress.
Oh no.
And I look like I'm on I look so crazy. But I had so much fun. And then my junior year, I went with my boyfriend and like all of our friends, and it was so much fun. We went to one of my friends from high school, her dad owned a hotel in town, and so we did our prom pictures at this hotel. And I felt like I was going to like the Golden Globes. I was like, this is the most beautiful I've ever felt. And I can't find that prom dress. I have most of my other prom dresses. I can't find that prom dress. And I have considered buying it on the internet again,
Courtney,
so that I could have it.
Oh, because
it's beautiful. Oh, like, I love it. It was chartreuse.
Okay. Well, you'll have to definitely post a photo of that one because interesting. Different prom experiences, everyone.
For sure. Don't live in high school. Like, move on with your life, though.
Yeah, for sure. Whether you have an experience more akin to mine or Courtney's, we have bigger and better things for ourselves after high school. But basically, back to the prom in the book. Ben is unaware of this pampering session that Maddie is getting into. And Ben's like thoughts about Maddie are so weird to me, because the whole time so Maddie shows up, she's looking bomb, she's looking gorgeous, and Ben's like, whoa, like any man would have to be like a stick to not react to her, she looks so hot. But like,
yeah, he like thinks himself into being like okay with being attracted to her, and he's too cerebral about it for me to be okay with it.
Yeah, it's like, it's very weird. But the whole time it was really just when he first saw her, which I think was okay, because when they get to the prom, which the Pacific Palisades High is having their prom at the Getty, which is freaking amazing. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful.
I like that would be a dream.
And their theme is fairyland.
Which, that was weird. There's like,
I thought it was cute.
Okay, well,
I don't know.
I guess so.
I don't remember my prom themes.
Ours was like, I think ours was like, it may have been Gatsby, which is so original for the East Coast.
Well, that was also like when the movie came out.
Yeah,
right?
Probably.
Like, that movie came out my, what, junior year of high school? So yeah.
Yeah, same time. It's same. We were the same year in high school.
I'm just remembering when it came out for me, because I only care about me.
Well, convenient for you then. But anyway, yeah, so it was Gatsby themed. But I don't know, the fairyland theme is interesting. They have like people dressed as fairies throwing glitter at people. I don't know. It's different. And I guess, so the prom committee is actually made up of Maddie's kind of like nerdy friends, which nerdy friends are great friends. Because you know what? Nerdy friends never do you wrong. They never do you dirty. Or they rarely do you dirty. Let's say that. Dirty enough to like, you know, send a Facebook message to every boy in the entire high school.
Well, it also felt like consistent with the Beverly Hills High prom experience in that like the prom weenies are prom weenies wherever you go.
Yeah, for sure. And then the prom weenies girl go like to join the college event committee things. What was the GW one called? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do know what you're talking about, and I don't remember what it was called, but like they did like midnight breakfast or whatever during
exactly
finals. And I think that as someone who was very much on the doing things in college committees, I agree that like sometimes you just need to accept that like it's fun to let go and have fun at things, and even if people think that that's lame, like being jaded prevents you from having fun at shit.
Yeah, when I was at Colby, I was part of the student planning committee or whatever it was, and I got to meet Chance the Rapper. So, like,
amaze.
That's cool stuff. You get to do cool stuff when you're a dweeb. So, like, embrace it. But basically,
Open yourself up to the possibilities of life.
And Ben realizes that, like, she's having a good time. They're having a good time. They're dancing. They're having fun. But he's realizing he has to leave soon so he can go see Anna. And something we didn't talk about before, but back all the way in the beginning, when Maddie and Jack and Ben and Anna were eating in the clam shack, Mr. T, one of Maddie's, I guess Maddie's math teacher, came up to say hi and tell everyone how great of a student Maddie was. And she turned into like awkward and like cringy and whatever. And she gets to the prom and starts asking about like, oh, like, where is Mr. T? Is he dancing with another teacher? Blah, blah, blah. And then Ben is like trying to leave, but he still thinks that Maddie has a crush on him. And so he's like, okay.
Yeah, because she even goes so far as to say that like, oh, do you think that everyone here thinks that you're my boyfriend?
Yes.
Which makes sense because you would think that, but also like he is starting to think that maybe she is really like putting.
And that's what we're being led to believe as well, for sure. Because then they're on this walk, she's leading him on with all these questions and all this stuff, and she leans in to kiss him, which was described as like a sizzling kiss. And then Ben says it would be sizzling if he didn't have Anna, which was kind of cute.
Yeah, that was nice, especially considering we've had this conversation about like, is kissing cheating?
I definitely think that this wouldn't be considered cheating because she kisses him, especially because the reason behind her kiss, he comes around the corner in just a little bit and it's Mr. T. She's trying to make her math teacher jealous, which is so awful. Hate it so
much.
Baby
barf in my mouth time. Burr, burr, burr.
Oh my god. Why can't we just she's got to be 16 or 17. There's an age of consent.
And even like Ben is like, "Okay, so those nudie pics that Jack took of you, were those for your math teacher?" And she's like, "Yeah, even he told me that that was kind of a bad idea." And Ben is like, "Please promise me that like
you're not going to have sex with your math teacher."
Your math teacher? Like you're just going to
dance
with him.
And she like giggles.
Yeah, because he invites her to dance and Ben has to leave to go be on his prom date unless he chooses to be the knight in shining armor and just like stay and protect her from her pervy math teacher. But so he leaves and like takes the limo back to his house to take his car to meet
Rome.
Up with Anna. And we never hear anything about Maddie and her math teacher again.
Well, not in this book.
Oh, is there? I don't
know. I mean, I don't know. I haven't started the
yet. So.
I told you I finished this book an hour and a half ago. Well, I guess 2.5 hours ago. We still have a lot to cover. And this is going to be, our longest A-Team episode yet. Or not A-Team, A-List. Anyway. Ben arrives at... Oh, my God. Okay. There's a couple people who are going to be late to the Beverly Hills High prom. The person that's late is Adam. Why is Adam late? Adam is late because his parents finally divulged the information of the file of Cammy's mother's death. And Adam, like an idiot, reads it right when they hand it to them. Doesn't give it to Cammy first. He reads it. And so he's late because he can't get over the fact that he knows how Cammy's mom maybe died. And
I'm mixed on him reading it.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, the internal debate that he has with himself and then the, like, problem that Cammy has with it is, like, obviously you want to empower Cammy to make this decision herself on whether or not she wants to pursue it, but also it is, like, her senior prom, and is it better to withhold this information and let her enjoy the night and then tell her? Or is it better to figure out what the information is? And if it's nothing, then don't worry about it. And then if it is something, tell her beforehand or wait and tell her after so you don't worry it, like, so you don't ruin the night. Like, there are a lot of considerations to make. And Adam is a teenager who doesn't have a fully formed frontal cortex.
Which is why his parents gave him a closed police file. Makes total sense.
But, like, is that a little bit on his parents?
That's what I'm saying.
A big, yeah.
I'm saying it's on his parents.
I don't know. Like, Cammy and Adam get into a fight about it. And part of it is Cammy lashing out at Adam because she's, like, she only can lash out at Adam. And then part of it, I think, is justified. And then part of it is, like, there really are no, like, right answers in this.
So they go to prom with everyone else, but then pretty much immediately leave because Adam is horrible at hiding the fact that he has a secret, which tracks. And so Cammy's like, I need to find this information out now. So they leave. And I feel like we should just cover this now while we're on Adam and Cammy, because Cammy opens up the folder and it's the Natalie Wood story. Like, it's the Natalie Wood story, except for basically, so what happened was, this is the testimony of, like, Alexandra Sharp? I don't know. Mrs. Sharp, Sam's mom. And she said that she had been having an affair with Clark Shepherd. At this time, she was picked up on the boat, and then she actively had sex with Clark Shepherd that night and was dropped off and wasn't sure what happened afterwards.
Which is some information that, like, apparently Sam never knew, and Cammy definitely didn't know, and it's all very crazy. And so Cammy's like, I obviously need to confront, like, everyone about this. And so she decides that she's going to go confront Sam at the post-prom party. But,
so we also learned that Cammy's mom was a USC swimmer in college. So, like,
yeah,
that doesn't...
Which is not the Natalie Wood story. The Natalie Wood story is that Natalie Wood was afraid of water. Yeah. But it's, there's infidelity, there's boats, there's, oh, there's no way this person would have, like, gotten off the boat. Like, how would she have drowned? Yeah. Who is this other person who knows more information than they're able to let on? And we obviously know that Sam hasn't spoken to her mom since this incident happened. So, and then they, like, got divorced.
We originally hear that Sam's mom was in Thailand. Like, in the first couple of books, they say she, like, ran off to join an ashram or something. And now we learn that she's married to a new person and lives in, like, Raleigh, North Carolina. And he's a professor at Duke, which, like, okay. So a little different. But basically, circling back to prom... Sam shows up, things are going really well, except for the fact that Monty, who's helping her film for this documentary that she's still doing, keeps, like, getting her in the shot, and she's, like, annoyed. She's like, I don't want to be the, like, Stan Lee in this where I make a cameo and everything, or, like, you know, that's not my thing. But lo and behold, he's kind of doing this because I don't think, this is what I want to think. So he says he doesn't know that this is what's happening. And Monty says that he's trying to, you know, he tried to say that this, he stopped this, but I don't think so. So
Parker tries to stop
it.
Monty, we don't actually
remember anyway, from. Parker tries to stop it because he's also, he's helping Sam kind of orchestrate the whole prom thing. And also, like, throwing low jabs at Eduardo the whole night. Annoying. And offering drinks to everyone. I don't know. Parker's weird in this book.
Parker's always a weirdo, but I do think that there's, like, something, I don't know, we can touch upon this in the later part of the Sam Parker Eduardo conversation, but, like, I'm a little suspicious.
Same. So Jazz and Fee, sorry, it's really hard to remember their names. So those are the girls who are leading the prom committee. They're super grateful to Sam. And there's kind of this question over, like, prom queen. And I don't know if you had, did you have prom queen and king?
Yes.
Oh, we did not. We just had homecoming queen, no king. But anyway, the whole question is over who's going to be prom king and prom queen, because all the cool people know it's not going to be them because they don't care enough anyway, and people won't vote for them. But it ends up actually being Sam and Parker. And so Sam is pissed because it's ruining her entire documentary, because now it looks like it's about her, which was not what it was supposed to be at all. And not only is she pissed because of that, she's pissed because she can't be there with Eduardo. And as much as she feels really beautiful and really happy, she can't share it with the one she really loves. So that kind of starts her wheel of dissension into, like, frustration over the night. And Ben and Anna are like off doing their thing. They're happy. Ben shows up. They have this big conversation.
They literally don't do anything else plot wise. They just are happy and hot.
Well, they have a really in-depth conversation about why Ben does what he does and like saves people, which is nice because what we complained about with Nate Archibald all the time was this like idea of being the white knight and the savior. And like Anna calls Ben out on that. And it's like, you don't have to do that. And he's like, well, I love being with you because I know I don't have to do that with you and all this stuff. And it's like, they have like a really in-depth, like therapist level conversation about it, which is great. Fine. Works for them. But no more plot development, except for the fact that Ben tells Anna everything about Maddie, which is very funny. But that is the end of our Ben and Anna. They're good, which is shocking because there were so many roadblocks in the way.
Thank God. Honestly, like, I don't care enough to ship them because they're both
I don't care anymore.
Milquetoast.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that we don't have to spend any more time on them. Another couple who we are seeing some positive developments from is Dee and Jack. They are trying to escape from Dee's, like,
chaperone.
Rehab minder. His name is Marshall. And he keeps trying to, like, keep them apart. He doesn't even let them kiss because Jack could be slipping drugs to Dee's mouth from his mouth, which is the grossest thing I've ever heard. Because, like, how would the drugs have not, like...
Plastic baggies.
Logistically, it makes no sense.
Plastic baggie.
Like, wouldn't you see someone putting a plastic bag in your mouth?
I guess. I mean, but that's my thought.
How long has he been holding it there? I don't know. I have lots of questions. And I've never been able to tie a knot in a cherry stem in my mouth. So being able to open a tiny plastic baggie inside my mouth as well? Impossible. But so eventually they abscond to a hotel post-prom and Marshall gets blackout drunk at the post-prom and ends up hooking up with one of the not even tertiary characters named Sky.
But the thing that's really big is that Jack feels for the first time like he should open up to someone. And so he tells Dee all about his sister Margie and kind of why he's doing everything he's doing. And she says, wow, she's so lucky to have a brother like you. And he immediately feels validated, which he's never felt before. And they are like, we're in love. Forever and ever.
Yeah, they're like, we're soulmates. And I'm like, is this old Dee coming back? I feel like that's a little dicey, but I do like their relationship more than other relationship
development. I mean, she does promise she's going to go back. Like, she tells Marshall she's coming back. She'll go back with him. Like, she, and there's nothing to say that, like, and Jack doesn't drink the entire night because he wants to make sure that he's sober with Dee. And, like, you know, there, it's a very healthy foundation of a relationship. So,
yeah, exactly. And it just seems like it's one of those like love at first sight type things. And I appreciate that, especially since Jack was initially like, I don't like blind dates just in case they might be an uggo.
Exactly. But kind of the grand, well, there's two grand finales to this episode. The first being Sam is getting more and more belligerently drunk because she is very upset that she was named prom queen, which ruined her chances at that documentary. But also that she felt really good about herself and Eduardo, her boyfriend, wasn't there to see it. And who is taking advantage of this but Parker? Parker is just getting Sam drunker. And this really made me frustrated.
Especially since he's like, oh, let's do a like bet to see who will skinny dip in the ocean, which regardless of who wins or loses that bet means that one of them would be naked, which is just a dicey situation to be in when like one of you is in a relationship. And so Sam kisses Parker
because she's sad.
But it again brings us back to that question of like, is kissing cheating? And who shows up on the beach but Eduardo, who I guess has found them somehow.
Well, and she told him that she was going to Hermosa Beach.
Yeah, but so, like, it's still just like how he got back from Mexico. And this entire time, Sam has been like fantasizing that he has like been at this family reunion and decided to forget about her with some hottie named Pilar, which we are reading from Eduardo's perspective as Sam's like horrifically fantasizing about it to the point where like Claire and I both thought that this was a real Eduardo POV.
I was so pissed. I was like, Eduardo, you dirtbag. I literally was highlighting things like angrily being like, I'm so mad. Because Courtney and I only ever said that we want the best for Sam. And which made this hurt so much more. It made this hurt so, I mean, but it felt really real. I don't know. Like, I was so emotionally invested. And Eduardo is basically like, you're not the woman I thought you were, and leaves her on the beach.
which we have continuously dealt with Sam feeling like he's using her for like her money and her fame or whatever. He must not really like her because of her curves. And they've had these beautiful, intense, emotional, like intimate moments together, but she still isn't buying it despite the fact that it is changing her perspective on herself a little bit. And so for him to be like, I am very hurt by what you did, just continues to drive the point home that he does really care about her for who she is. Because if he didn't and he had all these other women at his beck and call, then he wouldn't be as hurt by it. But he is. And so she is upset at Parker. She's like, dude, screw you. Like, you are part of the problem, part of the reason why this happened, which I think is a little bit valid.
I do think he was part of the problem. I think he was egging her on. Like, he knew she was in a relationship, and he also knew, like, she says on a number of occasions that, like, Parker overheard this really vulnerable conversation and checked in on me, or, like, Parker knew I was struggling tonight. And it's like, okay, so Parker knows. Parker knows you're having a tough time, and he's going to use this as an opportunity to like, take advantage of you. Even if it's not taking advantage money-wise, he definitely was like, okay, this is my time to, like, even if he has, like, emotional feelings for Sam or whatever, it's still taking advantage.
I just feel like we both would have felt differently if, like the last book, we got some Parker POVs where we would be able to see him falling for Sam or not falling for Sam, see, either way. And I'm hoping that in the next book we do get some Parker point of view.
I mean, I guess, but I also feel like you and I were very divided on Parker last book because I thought he was skeevy and a little bit weird. And you were like, oh, Parker's, like, struggles. And I understand. And I was like, okay, fine.
Well, part of the thing that you really disliked about him was his internal commentary about looking past Sam's, like, weight and, like, body issues.
So that's why this...
And so if we were able to see into Parker to be able to see whether or not he was using her for, like, an easy, like, desperate lay versus, like, he is actually falling for her, for, like, her soul as opposed to what... And, like, I don't know. I don't think that fat woman can't also be hot.
No.
But it would be interesting to see what was happening, what Parker's motivation was. So I'm hoping that we get to see that from the fallout in next
book. I do like that we had multiple fat, hot women in this book. Well, I don't even know if we can say that either of them are fat. Maddie should have been left at 300 pounds because you can be 300 pounds and really fucking hot. But whatever. Also, 300 pounds, I don't even know if that qualifies you for stomach stapling. But also, if it's your friend's dad, I guess that, like, anyone can have their stomach stapled. Do you remember that episode of Grey's Anatomy? Do you watch Grey's Anatomy?
No, I do not. I watched 3 seasons, okay, and I could not stand how much I cried or Meredith Grey in general.
Also, there was a 17-year-old who went to Tijuana on spring break to have her stomach stapled so that her mom would stop criticizing how much she ate.
That's upsetting.
And then her stomach, obviously. Then she got sepsis and was, like, gonna die. And then her mom the whole time was like, well, I don't understand why she just took the easy route out instead of just sticking with the diet. And that hit so close to home for me. I was just like, oh my God, ugh. Anyway.
Big yikes to be had by
But mom. That's what made me think of with Maddie. But anyway, that's the end of Sam for now. So then Sam is sitting on a rock looking out at the Pacific Ocean. And who shows up but Cammy to spill this revelation. And Sam is like, woe is me. Eduardo hates me. My life sucks. Tonight's the worst. Blah, 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 blah. And Cammy's like, no, I got to tell you about something. It's worse than that. And Sam's like, how can it be worse than that? And Cammy's like, shut up. Shut
Cammy's
up.
Like, real people have problems,
She's
Sam.
Like, this is about my mom. And Sam's like, that happened years ago. And Cammy, like, shoves the thing in her face. Cammy was originally going to be like, this is too graphic. I don't know if you want to read it. But then Cammy was like, okay, you're being super annoying. Here, read this. And then Sam is like, also like mind blown. And she's like, when you confront your dad, I'm going to be there too. End scene. That's all we get.
And it was great. I don't know. I think that it was a real opportunity for this confrontation. And I want to use the word confrontation really deliberately here. It could have gone two ways where we know that Cammy is a very volatile person. And she could have very easily lashed out at Sam the way that she's been lashing out at Adam, but instead she chose to approach Sam and be like, you are my friend. You've been my friend since before my mom died. And, like, you know how like close I was to her. And even if I'm not letting you in on this, like, I'm hoping that you know how important this is to me. And Sam immediately understood how important it was to her when she read it.
Which is great. Because now we know that Sam and Cammy are on solid footing and everything is good for them. Not like everything is good. Things are not good. But their relationship is good.
Distinctly bad, but
We don't know what's happening between Sam and Eduardo. We don't know really what the resolution with Cammy and Adam was. per se. Dee's doing good. I'm guessing that hopefully Maddie's okay and not in a weird, I don't know. And then Anna and Ben are in Anna and Ben land doing Anna and Ben things. So that's fine. Do you have any other questions for me this book, Courtney? I feel like we covered a lot because I went into a very in-depth conversation about my mental health. But if you have anything else, I'm here.
Would you want to take a helicopter to prom?
I don't want to take a helicopter anywhere.
Okay, because the Beverly Hills High prom squad do take a helicopter to prom. And if I'm thinking about it in terms of, like, I'm wearing a gown
and my hair,
and I just got my hair and my makeup done, to then get into a helicopter seems like not the best choice.
I mean, I guess.
And also this helicopter that they took, they replaced all the seats with leather couches that they then just, like, strap the seatbelts around. Seems dangerous.
Yeah, that's my thing, is I feel like too many people die in helicopters. R.I.P. Kobe.
I was just thinking.
I mean that in a very honest way, where I'm like, too many people die in helicopters because helicopters are not well regulated. And like, this is the exact example of like when Kobe Bryant passed away and died, it was in a similar situation to what is happening in this book. And so no, I don't want to go in a helicopter.
I also wouldn't want to go into a helicopter for prom, but for a much shallower reason.
Yeah. Anyway, was that your question?
That was my one. I mean, like, we talked about a lot of
stuff. We did talk about. This is, I feel like, we went more in depth than we have in any other episode.
There was a lot to talk about. I mean, we had mental health. We had weight loss surgery. We had disability. We had, like, a lot of stuff to talk about.
For sure. And, you know, I think we did a pretty good job. Do we want to do our fashion?
Let's hope
Let's end on a, I don't know, pretty high note and talk about our fashion faves.
Yes. Do you want to go first or should I?
Sure. I'll go first. So my fashion faves are Anna, Dee, Cammie, and Sam's prom dresses.
Do it up.
So my favorite thing about these is that none of them care about the price tag. Not a single one of them. They do also take care of Maddie's prom dress, which was really nice. But
yeah.
It's so, let's see. I'm going to also talk about how Sam describes. She tells the stylist all of her friend's styles, and I'm going to say how she describes them. So, because I think it's really cool. Mm-hmm. So, Sam tells her stylist that Anna is 5'8", size 4. She likes clean lines and classics, which, great description. The options for Anna are, I'm just going to do the narrowed down version. So there was a sleeveless black silk Oscar de la Renta that fell in chic narrow column almost to the floor, and a strapless Chanel haute couture gown of the palest silver pleated over the bust and very fitted, which dipped in the back to the waist, which sounded amazing. So Anna wore that, the silver, and the stylist says it looks like it was made for her.
I'm so glad that she didn't end up re-wearing the like blue Celine Same. Gown that she wore to some state dinner. And I was like, Anna, come on.
Yeah, she was like,
of course you wore that to a state dinner and got a compliment.
Yeah, no, she was like the Belgian ambassador.
Bush daughters were boring.
Yeah, she did say the Bush daughters were boring, which was so funny. And like, she keeps reiterating the fact that her parents are donors to both political parties. And I was like, Anna, we know that they're secretly racist, but they just want to look good for all the Democrats and like also tax returns. I don't know. They're the like socially liberal, but fiscally conservative. Anyway, so. Then Jillian, who's the stylist, she picked out for Sam a midnight blue, I think it was Stella McCartney. Let me see. It just says midnight blue, which basically the dress. So, oh, it's an Emmanuel Ungaro, which is great. So it's a layer of braided chiffon that encircled her neck and continued down the center of her chest to the top of her breasts. The 3 inches of chiffon across her bust were skin tight, but then the dress fell into floaty folds of material, disguising Sam's lower body and emphasizing her upper body. Cammie says, get it made for you in every color. Sam admired her reflection. Damn, she looked good, possibly even really good. And the dress was a size 8, which made her feel really good. Which, like, hey, get things that make you feel good, regardless of their size, whatever. Then Cammie's dress is, you expect it, it's Versace, which duh. So it's white satin Versace, so tight that it can would be impossible to wear underwear, not even a thong. Casually, Kimmy stripped down to the buff, careful so as not to smudge her fresh manicure, and then let Jillian do the dozens of tiny hooks hidden behind a row of pearls that fastened the dress. This sounded like the Elizabeth Hurley Versace dress from the early 2000s. Do you know what I'm talking about with the safety pins, the black safety pin dress?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. She was with Hugh Grant in all the photos. I'll send them to you. They're great. It's a great dress. It's very early Versace. It's like, that's quintessential, which makes total sense for Cammy. So sure. Then Dee would be easily overwhelmed by too much fabric, so she suggested a simple but fitted strapless pastel pink Roland Moray gown with a white overlay. Blair Waldorf, like in the show, like Leighton Meester's character, wore a lot of Roland Moray, and also so does Meghan Markle. Love. Very classic. Very beautiful. Feel like that'd be great. So loved all of those dresses. I think Anna's Chanel Haute Couture is probably my favorite. It reminds me of a Margot Robbie dress, because Margot Robbie is only allowed to wear Chanel Haute Couture because she's got like a contract with them that I'll find. We can put it in the show notes or maybe on an Instagram story. So keep an eye out for that. Courtney, what was your fashion fave?
My fashion fave was the outfit that Anna wears to visit Ben during his internship at Triste, the club.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the nightclub internship. Yeah,
because it's so not relevant to the
It's also club. Basically so just Ben being a bouncer.
He takes up different jobs.
Smoothie guy?
Anna comes to visit him while he's working at the smoothie bar, because this club also has like a sober section that's like an outdoor
patio. It's kind of fun.
Non-alcoholic smoothies, which is great. But so Anna, she shows up, she skips a line, both because her name is on the list and also because she's a hottie, hot, hottie. And so this is what she's wearing to this club that's so cool that it hasn't yet made any of the lists yet. But once it does make a list, like, it'll become post-cool. She's donned a white Hermes silk crepe chiffon blouse with a loose gathered neckline that allowed the blouse to fall off of one shoulder or the other, and a fitted gold and white Philosophy by Alberto Ferretti cotton bias cut skirt that ended a good 2 inches above
her. Ooh, shocker.
She'd piled a few beaded necklaces that her father had brought back for her from a business trip to India, okay, and finished off the outfit with aqua Balenciaga sandals that tied at the ankle with ribbons. She'd parted her hair on one side so that it fell over one eye, so emo, and on a whim had dug out her MAC matte red lipstick. Okay, Anna, crazy time.
Dug it out.
And like the fact that she's just like, oh, I'm gonna wear a white Hermes silk blouse to a club was hilarious to me. I love the outfit and I love each of its individual pieces as well, but the attitude that Anna has surrounding it, where it's like, I'm gonna wear a white Hermes silk blouse to a club, and also it's going to be crazy time because my skirt is 2 inches above my knee and I'm wearing red lipstick and my hair is parted to the side.
She also says that she decided in the afternoon that her attitude would both be ridiculous and knee-jerk. So she's trying to be ridiculous with this outfit, which I'm like, continuing. She's constantly being like, I'm not like other girls. This is my attempt to being like clubbing, and it's all designer, and my scandalous skirt is only 2 inches above my knee.
I just am imagining someone sweaty and like bumping into her and spilling something on her, and
like a smoothie maybe.
Yeah, bumping and spilling an entire acai smoothie
on an Hermes blouse. Yes, love that. I do like the teal Balenciaga heels. Those sound fun.
Yeah, I love all of the individual pieces, and I think that it would be a cute outfit if she weren't such a stick up the ass. Yeah,
exactly. So what was your State of the Union for the week, Courtney? What's your in and out?
My in for my State of the Union this week is meditation. I've been doing a lot of Peloton meditation classes, including I showed up early to a date last week and I was doing a Peloton meditation in the car. So then I walked around the block of the restaurant that I was going to so that I could finish the Peloton meditation because I was like really stressed out. And then my out is staying out late. Similarly to the meditation thing, I have been going out with people, and as nice as it is to be able to go and do things again compared to last year where like you couldn't stay out late, people gotta stop inviting me out to things starting at like 9 o'clock unless I have a nap beforehand and like 9 o'clock is the first thing that we're doing, because to plan for a 6 o'clock thing means that I'm getting ready at 4, and so then if we're still out at midnight, I was not like energetically prepared.
No, for sure. I agree. Sleep is important.
Very much so. Claire, what are your ins and outs for your State of the Union this week?
So my in for this week is going to be routine. And not in like a, I have to do the same thing every day thing. I guess not routine, ritual. So starting your day with kind of the same ritual in terms of like getting yourself in the headspace to have a good day, and really cherishing your like quiet moments to yourself before you necessarily have to like log on for work or like get your chores done. And that doesn't mean like getting on your phone and scrolling through TikTok, but that means like, you know, making yourself a cup of tea and like maybe going outside, you know, just taking the time to like start your day right. I'm working on like doing that pretty deliberately every morning and getting up enough time before I start work to like really set my day off right, and it's been really enjoyable. I light like I pick out my candle of the day and I light my candle at my workstation and like all those little things. So just trying to make your days like special and like, you know, kind of a little bit of a ritual every day. That's my in. My out for this week, actually meant to make it my out for last week, but I forgot, which I don't know how I forgot because there's no way to forget this. But my out for this week is the Jeffrey Bezos song by Bo Burnham, because it is incessant and it is never going to leave my head ever, ever, ever again. It is always there and I'm so over it. I'll include a very tiny clip here in case you don't know what I'm talking about.
I have it in my brain again. It's a brain one.
Yeah, now it's in everyone's brains. I'm sorry that I put that there for you, but oh my god, I recognize that Bo Burnham's very talented and I think a lot of his comedy is funny, but I'm over it. I just don't need to hear it anymore.
Do you remember, I saw this on Twitter recently, and by recently I mean earlier this evening, where someone posted that Spider Pig clip from The Simpsons.
Yes, that movie, it's the same thing.
It's the exact same thing, where it was like when we were in middle school,
Spider Pig,
everyone was singing that pig song.
But now it's exactly. Now it's CEO entrepreneur. I can't do it. I can't get it out of my head. David literally hears me.
That's what that word is? He's saying entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not what I thought he was saying.
No, it's CEO entrepreneur. Entrepreneur born in 1964. The other week it was the Alabama, Alaska, Arizona. That was stuck in my head for like 6 days and I couldn't get it out of my head.
Claire, I'm mad at you now.
I'm so sorry. David was like, because I also couldn't figure out the order the states went in. I kept forgetting states and then messing up the tune. And so it took me like 2 days to even remember the whole song. So I really apologize to everyone who's listening who maybe now has either of those songs stuck in their head. Or, you know, Courtney can take the responsibility for Spider Pig because that was not me.
Yeah, I'll own that one. My B.
But if you guys don't hate us now and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, feel free to rate, review, and subscribe. We love when you guys do that. Please don't mention any of the songs that we just put in your head because I am very sorry. If you want to reach out to us on socials, you can find us on Instagram at Witty Committee Pod. You can find us on Twitter at Witty Pod. You can email us the Witty Committee at I think it's wittycommitteepod@gmail.com. I just get confused because you can sign up for show notes on our website, thewittycommittee.com. And I think I covered everything there. But
join us next week as we read American Beauty, the next book in Zoe Dean's The A-List series.
And we keep judging the mean girl right back, one book at a time. You didn't say bye-bye.